The CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast is now on Stitcher.
The broadcast is now starting for all attendees on listen-only
BlackBerry and WebOS phones. Stitcher is smart radio for your phone. Find it in your app store or at Stitcher.com. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio.
Listening to CFRN, the Christian Financial Radio Network.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/CFRN. Over 85,000 titles. Choose from mystery, romance, religion, science, technology, business, New York Times bestsellers, even children's books. You name it, Audible has it. With 85,000 titles to choose from, you're sure to find the perfect audiobook for yourself or to give as a gift, and it's absolutely free. Just point your browser to audibletrial.com/CFRN. That's audibletrial.com/CFRN. And become a part of the audiobook revolution by downloading your free audiobook today. audibletrial.com/CFRN.
Hey, trader, want to get rich quick? Well, good luck with that. If, on the other hand, you actually want to learn how to trade, the place to be is www.cfrn.net. Tune in Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern, for our daily devotional, and then spend the next 3 hours learning how it's done from professional traders who actually trade for a living. That's www.cfrn.net. Every trading day from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern. CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living.
Good afternoon, traders, and welcome back to the CFRN E-Mini Futures Cast. This is the daily broadcast of indeterminate length where we discuss all things E-Mini along with some really big ideas on the finer points of trading gold, bonds, crude, sugar, the euro, and even T-bills. Joining us today from our studios in Boston, Mr. Michael Bork. From our trading desk in Chicago, Mr. Burton Schlichter. And from our studios in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mr. David Williams. Now, to get things started, let's go to our host and founder in Studio A, overlooking South Mountain, America's largest city park. Here's Dwayne.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. Today is Thursday, 12th day of April, 2012. Quick look at the numbers. The Dow up 143 points, S&P up 14, comp up 35, oil is up $1.20, gold is up $16, literally nothing but green on my screen. Good afternoon, Michael.
Good afternoon, Dwayne.
Now, last night on the blog, here's what I said. Currently on Globex, price is attempting to move higher. If price can rally above 1368 and hold on a pullback, the upside looks to be 1380, 1381, which is the next zone overhead. On a daily chart, we have a bearish pattern I've not seen in quite some time. If the market wants to rally, don't fight it. However, should we make it up to 1380, 1381, the market will have positioned itself for a substantial drop. Be ready if and when the opportunity presents. This morning, when we started the live trading room, the first thing that I pointed out to those in attendance was that we were looking at this overhead. Now, when the market opened, obviously we were down here. And I said, I recapped what I just shared with you, about the potential for that 8081 to be resistance. And there's a couple of good reasons why. Number one, it's a weekly trading zone. Number two, on Monday, it's what held the market back. On Tuesday, it's what held the market back. So this is the third trip up, okay? So I think that's now three good reasons. No, wait, four. Well, whatever. You get my point. And so what we said was, all right, price is down here. We were down, you know, at the open, down in this area somewhere. We said, okay, if that's the prevailing school of thought that you have, that price is now here, and what you really want to do is be able to get short up here, potentially, what do you do about all this? Well, you could turn it into a trade. And I would love to tell you we did, but we didn't because we actually, the trades we took this morning in the live trading room were off the YM, off the Dow. We looked at this trade. We talked about it. We just never actually executed it live in real time. And the trade was right here. Okay, you can see the opening bell here, 8:30, ding, ding, ding. Price breaks above the 67-68 zone. Held on a pullback. Pulled right back to the BBC beautifully. And when Michael does a recap, he'll talk to you about this because he can explain it better. But it was just a perfect, picture-perfect kind of a setup for the slingshot. And price then from this pullback, not that you couldn't have been long from the zone at 68, you certainly could have been, okay? When you got the cross, I mean, there literally there was a cross and a pullback right there. You could have literally been long from 68 if you were on your toes and ready to trade right at the opening bell. But then this pullback came in, which we chose not to take. We just didn't take it. Pullback was a 72 and a quarter, looks like, 72 half. And then it went right on up beautifully to 1380, where it double-topped and now has kind of triple-topped. Now, I mentioned the daily setup, okay? This is a daily chart. This is the June contract, and I'm showing you all the way back to December. So I realize that it would be better with a continuous contract, perhaps, but this shows the point I was attempting to make. Back in December, a little bullish cross here, or really more of a continuation, but higher high, pullback, higher high, pullback, higher high, pullback, higher high, pullback. The only real test was right here, and we bounced right back from that. Right here is the first time we didn't put in this whole rally on a daily chart. It's the first time we didn't put in a higher high, right there. That's your first heads up, like, what's different about this picture? And then price closes below the BBC, first time since December. And now pulling back for a potential short trade on a daily chart. So what we've done is we've taken the hourly and said, We've looked at previous resistance from the week, right at the weekly trading zone, Monday, Tuesday, now Thursday. We've gone from daily down to hourly. Now down to one, two, three times we bumped our head up against this on the 10,000 contract chart. We could have something developing. So stay tuned. We'll walk you through it, however it turns out. But all the ingredients are on the table. Is the market going to bake us a cake? We'll find out on the short side. But keep your eyes on it. Michael, what do you know about this suspicious package, WFC number two, spotted an explosive device, NYPD called. You know anything about that? It's like breaking news.
Nope, I don't know anything about it.
Anybody in the trading room know what's going on? Apparently they actually found an explosive device. A hand grenade. My little scroll's not telling me exactly where they found it. They found it at WFC number 2.
Yeah.
Who's that?
I don't know.
What's the WFC 2? Is that the Wrestling Federation?
I don't know. I'm trying to look it up. Probably in the same place you are, but Bertha's not cooperating.
Yeah. One of the really smart, news savvy Google folk. We'll type it in here in a minute. There we go. Somebody's typing it in. World Trade Center 2. Why do they call it the WFC?
World Financial Center?
No, is it the World Freedom Center or something?
I don't know.
They didn't say WTC, World Trade Center. They said WFC. Unless it's a typo. Gee, I mean, you bring a grenade to the World Trade Center? What is that like bringing a knife to a gunfight after what happened there before? You know, the horrific tragedy previously? Yeah. I mean,
it's like bringing a spitball to a gunfight.
Yeah, come on. That's no good. All right, Michael, I'm going to go ahead and turn this over to you here in a minute. I want to talk to you guys in a minute about Instagram. Some of you know what it is. Some of you have it on your iPhone. Some of you don't know what it is. Some of you know the story behind it. Some of you don't. I want to talk about that a little bit. But I want to give Michael ample time to walk through the trade setups this morning and talk to you about the slingshot. And I know we had some people in the live trading room this morning who wanted more information on the slingshot. And because I haven't been using it personally in my own trading, but after today, after having some of the partners actually walk me through it, I probably will be utilizing it more. For those of you who are not a partner, but you've been on the free trial and you're ready to become a partner, you should have gotten an email already from Michael. If you did not, then email support@cfrn.net. We'll get you the necessary paperwork over, we'll get you signed up, and we'll make sure that you are in the partners meeting tonight. And for you partners who had questions about some of the settings on the slingshot, because you really liked how it was playing out on my screen, and you want it to play out the same way on your screen, you just need to get your settings correct, and Michael will help you with that tonight. So,
yes, I would be happy to do that.
Other than that, and for those who have not yet taken the free trial, cfrn.net/apply. And for those of you just hearing the sound of my voice, wondering, what charts is this guy talking about? Go to the homepage of cfrn.net. On the right-hand side, there's a red, white, and blue button. Click here now. Click that. Register. It'll get you into a GoToWebinar environment where you'll actually be able to see the charts that we're talking about. You'll be able to ask questions. You'll be able to participate in the discussion. It'll be a much better experience for you all around. I realize that the registration process is cumbersome. It takes like 30 seconds of your time. I apologize for that. If I can ever figure out a way to give you back that 30 seconds of your life, it's a done deal. But in the meantime, I need to extract 30 seconds a week for you to register. Now, here's the good news. You only have to register once each week. Come on a Monday, click it, do the deal, and then every day you'll get emailed the link to just pop in. You just click, pop, click, pop, click, pop. It's a piece of cake. Anybody can do it. How do I know? I do it every single day. Fair enough? Michael, it's all yours.
All right. Hey, you know, before I start the recording, I know you sent it to me, but can you just throw your DOM up there? Let me start the recording, actually. And if you throw your DOM up there, it'll record. YM. Yeah, the YM DOM. It'll record that, and then I'll just...
Dom, dom, dom.
All right. Now I will just start the recording. In a second. All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Thursday, April 12th, 2012. And you can see right here, these are the results from the morning trades. There were two trades on the YM, plus 12 points on the YM. All right. Now I'm going to switch the charts back to my desktop right now. So you may see a little flicker in between here. All right. Now you should be looking at my charts now. Again, good. Now I'll go over where those trades were. Okay. They're on the YM, so I'll just bring up the YM. The yellow arrows are the two trades that were taken this morning. But rather than just start right there, I'll start with all the trades that set up this morning, okay? I wasn't in the live trading room this morning, so I'm just going to go through all these trades. I didn't take any trades in the live trading room this morning. Oh, I took one soybean trade after the trading room closed. But here we go, right here. This is what we're looking at, okay? Down here on the slingshot, we have bullish divergence, a pullback and test of the BBC, an up close, and a move up. Right here, the same thing. This one didn't actually hit the BBC, so you may not have done it there. You could have done it right there instead. Okay, where it did actually hit the BBC for the move up. Though it was going right into a weekly trading zone, I would not have taken this trade over here. This one here, I probably would have. This one, probably not. This trade right here is the one that Dwayne took in the live trading room this morning. Okay, you can see right there is the divergence. Here was the pullback and test of the BBC. After the up close, he went long for 19 ticks. Okay, 19 ticks or points. The next trade was over here. We were losing the divergence on this trade, but it still had some divergence. The pullback was right here. The up close was right here, I believe. Dwayne got long at 8:24. So he got an entry right about here. After the up close right here, he got long right here. That gave 4 ticks profit before it turned around and took him out with a 7 tick stop. Okay? So those were the two live trades this morning in the live trading room. And now just moving on. After we had the bearish cross right here, we would have been looking for a short with this divergence right here. That would have stopped me out because I only have about 7 ticks risk, usually 7 or 8 ticks risk. We would have made it back right here. Okay? Right here was another opportunity on the short side. We would have shorted right in here at 8:18, down to 8:09 or 8:10, but we definitely would have been able to lock in some kind of profit on that one. Right here was bullish divergence. The MA1 crossed up above the BBC. Pulled back right here for a test. There was a nice long opportunity right there. Over here, again, bullish divergence, but it was losing the divergence. You could have gotten long right in there, and it would have been tough holding through all this right here. You know, it was, I don't know, 5 minutes worth of holding, but it would have been tough holding it through all that right there. I probably would have moved my stop up to break even and gotten out of break even. Let's see. I had highlighted these right in here. We had the bearish divergence. Okay. After the MA1 crossed below the BBC, price pulled back up to test the BBC. And with a down close right there, it dropped down. There was another one of those right in here. Right, this one would have stopped you out right there. Though I'm not so sure. I would have gotten a break even on this because once it was held by the MA1 right here, I actually probably would have gotten, I would have lost a few ticks, but not too many. I would have moved my risk right up above this. So I probably would have had a 5 tick stop on that. And right now, where we are right now, we have bullish divergence right there. And the up close was right here, right, this bar right here. After it came down and tested the BBC, you could have had this bar right here been your entry. All right, this green one right here could have been it. Either way, 7 or 8 ticks risk would have kept you in the trade, and you'd either be sitting in some profit right now or taking some profit at this point. And those were the YM trades, okay? The trade that Dwayne mentioned earlier on the ES, let me point this out. I don't know why this keeps happening on my 10K chart. I need to make a new one. On the ES, Dwayne mentioned earlier There was a bullish cross and a pullback down to the BBC. Over here, it tested the BBC. And down here, you can see they had all this bullish divergence right there. All right. So an up close after that test, which would have been right here on the other side of the MA1 as well, would have been a nice spot to enter that trade. All right. There was almost no drawdown on it, maybe three ticks or so drawdown. That would have been a good spot on the ES. Okay. Right now, it's in kind of a mixed-up spot. It's testing the weekly trading zone again. We just printed resistance dots at the weekly trading zone, but it's been going pretty flat here for a little while. The range from 77 up to 79.75, so 2 3/4 point range for the last, since 10:30, for the last 2 hours, it's been in a 2 3/4 point range here at the weekly trading zone. All right, we have bearish divergence down here. We got a bearish cross, but we didn't have price pull away and then come back to test it. So we don't have anything here right now. Just a bunch of sideways movement. All right. Let's look at the Russell. The Russell didn't have that many opportunities this morning because it was really trending. It didn't pull back. Okay, you would have had to have been aggressive on the Russell. Hold on. There's some questions. Is the gap you are calling the divergence? Because I see most of the lines going in the same direction. Ah. Okay, the question is on the divergence. The divergence is down here on this indicator only. Okay, on this indicator only down here on the snap. I mean on the slingshot. And it's the space between these lines and this line. Now, usually the green line, well, the green line is always going to be the fastest one. It's always going to be the fastest one, the quickest to react. Not now, Bruce. I'm sticking to just one trade setup across all the markets. It's easier for everyone to learn. Right here, you can see not all the lines were going in the same direction, but we had the divergence. So when it's actually playing out like this, I don't know if we have divergence right now. Yeah, we do. Right here, we have bearish divergence. Okay, you can see all three of these lines are going up, and this one's going down. That is bearish divergence on the Russell. Okay. So it's not showing any weakness here right now. It did right here. This would have been a spot to short a few minutes ago. But a down close over here right now would probably be a decent spot to short. Okay. One thing I'm looking at right here, though, let me just point this out to y'all. Let me draw the trend lines for you. There's the trend line. And, oops. There's the trend line. It was pretty close. Now, if I just copy this one and I paste it on here. See that? We're in a channel right here. And if I drag that back this way, and this one back this way, it's in a channel. So right now, it's coming off the bottom of the channel. It may make it to the top of the channel right here. It may not, but it's given some mixed up signals right here as it goes from side to side. Okay, just wanted to point that out to you. All right, well, I'm on the Russell, so let me just scroll back here, or I'll blow it up, and then we can do it this way. Let's see. Now, when I turned the charts on this morning, there were some great trades in the pre-market right here. I turned the charts on right about here. It's 7:30 my time. There was a great trade right here. I outlined this morning. I don't think anybody was there when I did that one. But this one right here, there were some folks in there. I think Frank and Alan and a couple other guys were in there when I did this one at 8:30. All right. There was a nice short opportunity right here with all this divergence. It came back up, tested the BBC with a down close right there. All right. After that, we had a bullish cross. We had bullish divergence, tested the BBC with an up close, so right in here. Now, this is still pre-market, but then once the market opened up, it didn't test the BBC till way over here, and it didn't have any divergence when it did, okay? The only time it had divergence was right in here, and then it would have been a little more aggressive, but you could have taken it long on the close above the MA1. Let's see, over here, it had a short opportunity right in here. 99.5, it dropped down to 99.1. before it pulled up to 800.5. That would have stopped me out, all right, because we had the bearish divergence right there. All right, we still had the bearish divergence over here, so there was another opportunity to take this trade on the short side right in here for the move down, okay? I don't know that I would have done that. I wasn't there and I didn't take any trades, so I can't really say. And that was pretty much it for the morning, guys. Really not much going on. You see we have a gravestone doji right here with bearish divergence. So that's suggesting it's going to go down. You could have shorted right there at 806, and it should make it down here to 805, probably. Okay. A close down below the MA1 and the BBC right here is pretty important. Okay, the BBC is this green line. The MA1 is this other line right here. All right. Dwayne had mentioned earlier the settings for the slingshot. Let me just go over those really quickly. All right, so you guys can see them in the recording, and when the recap is out on the when the recap of today is out on the website, then you guys can stop the recap, pause it, and just set the things the way they are here. The things that are different: the S1 fast on is set to true, color is green, number is 2. The S2 is 5. The fast on is set to true. The fast color is set to black. The S3 cycle on is set to true. I changed the width to 4 to make it a little thicker, easier to see. The fast on is also true, and I changed the color to brown. Okay. Those are the settings that I have on that. You see the MA1 is holding the price right here. So if you were short this Russell right now, it looks like it's trying to move it. It looks like it's trying to get up here. If you were short the Russell up here at 806, you know, 805.9, you shouldn't have any risk above 806.5. Okay, that should be your max risk, probably 5 ticks. Let's see. So that was the Russell, the ES, the YM. You can look at soybeans really quickly. Now, I'm going to throw the BBC on here just to be consistent, okay? Consistent across all the markets. The same setup, the same thing across all the markets. Now, right here at 10:30 is where the soybeans really open up. Okay? There was some bullish divergence right here. It would have been really aggressive to get long at that point, not knowing what it was going to do. Price pulled back right here, but we still had bullish divergence. There was nothing going on there. Right in here, we start to put in bearish divergence, but we're not getting our closes below the MA1. You could have shorted right in here. All right, this spot right here. All right, down to the MA1, or the BBC. Let's see. Right in here was a mixed bag. It would have been aggressive if you wanted to go long right there. Right here we had bullish divergence with an up close after a test to the BBC right here. So right there was the spot to get long, okay? And this was the bullish divergence right there. All right, we lost the divergence here. So after the test of the BBC, we really didn't have any divergence to go long off of. Over here, I shorted this aggressively, and I ended up taking a break even on it. This was not based on what I'm showing you right now. Okay, there was divergence right here, bearish divergence, and a test of the BBC with a gravestone doji. You could have shorted right here. It would have stopped you out had you shorted right there. But I suppose that was an opportunity right there to get short. Nothing else yet. Okay. Those are the soybeans. And let's see. That's pretty much it, I think. So the YM, the ES, the Russell, the soybeans. Those are the markets for the day, I think. All right. I think we're going to wrap it up here. All right. I'll wrap up the recording right here anyway. There we go. Recording is off. If anybody has any questions, you can email them to me at support@cfrn.net. And I forgot to mention, anybody that's in here that's on the free trial, We have a partners meeting tonight. You need to be a partner to get in there. You all should have an email from me with all the requirements to become a partner. Check your emails. If it's not in your email, check your spam folder, your junk, whatever it may have been shoved in there. Either way, if you don't have it and you're interested in becoming a partner and getting into the partners meeting tonight, you can email me at support@cfrn.net. And we'll get you in there. We can get you running in no time at all and get you into the partners meeting tonight. Okay. Larry, because it suits the risk, the question was, why do I use a 4-tick range bar instead of a higher range bar? First, it'll generate more trades. You know, in the live trading room in the first 2 hours of every day, you know, we want to be able to trade in there. If you have a higher range bar, say you have a 10 or 15 tick range bar, you might only get one trade set up in that time period. You know, you want to be able to see the trades happen so you can actually learn to trade, not just learn to watch the market and see it not do anything. Okay? That makes sense? Good. That's not to say that you can't do it with a higher range bar. If that's what you like to do, then absolutely, you can do that. You know, if you become a partner and you get the indicators on your desktop, you can do whatever you want with it. With a Russell, for instance, there's, you know, using an 8-tick range or even a 10-tick range, there's a pretty basic, simple setup that you can do with a Russell just using the MA1.
You can also use multiple time frames. You can look at, a 10-tick or 12-tick or whatever, you know, suits you. And
yeah, we do.
Trade in the direction on use the smaller time frame, which reduces your risk, to trade in the direction of the larger time frame.
Mm-hmm. And we do have partners that trade in larger time frames. You know, I know we have one of our partners, Brent, trades a 12-tick Russell instead of a 4-tick. You know, 12-tick range Russell instead of a 4-tick range Russell.
It's going to give you fewer trades, but you'll stay in the trade longer, and the trade will move a greater distance.
Yep.
Which then means you have to be able to ask yourself the tough questions like, can I stay in the trade?
Yep. If you're
accustomed to scalping and spending 2 minutes in a trade, learning to go from a two-minute trade to a two-hour trade, that's a whole different skill set. It takes work.
It does work in a lot of screen time. You know, you really have to get comfortable with it. But let me just show you something here quickly. I'll just flip it to an 8-tick, okay, because I have one of those up. Basically, with this, once you get on the other side of the MA1, you know, it's just like your naked 2100. You get on the other side, you get your pullback. Bang. You get on the other side, you get your pullback. And up it goes. You get on the other side. When I say on the other side, I mean it starts trading below it, and then it pulls back to the MA1. All right? Like right now, it's going sideways, so I wouldn't do anything in here. But you can see that's worked over and over again. Now, there haven't been that many trade setups as well from the open. The open's right here. So there's 1, 2, 3, 4 of them so far. Four of them have happened so far. And, you know, they're 8-tick. On an 8-tick range, you're going to see, you know, a lot larger moves, I think. Well, you're not going to see larger moves, but you're going to see fewer bars in a larger move. Does that make sense? Yeah, it makes sense. It's just logical. But MA1, it's just, you know, that was our first indicator, right, Dwayne? MA1 is just moving average number one. When we had a dearth of names for our indicators. that was our first one when we put it together. We just called it MA1. The original name for that was like CFRN moving average number one, I think. Wasn't that the original name for it?
No, I think it was like it was more complicated than that.
Yeah, it was something. We had a big, big, long name for it. But
CFA trend indicator, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And we decided to just cut it down to MA1 because I knew we were going to be saying it a lot. But you can see right here on the 8-tick range that, you know, the same stuff works. The setups that we had on the 4-tick range, they're highlighted. And you can see the little bubbles are still there. So in this one, you would have been long sooner. Actually, that was a pre-market. Oh, on this chart, it's a pre-market. In the other chart, you would have been long right here. You would have had a short over here. And that's it.
Now, some of you are looking at this and you're going, hey, wait a minute. If I just got short when it was red and long when it was blue, I can make a lot of money. Well, if that's how you feel, you should probably become a partner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that philosophy worked real well this morning up until we got into this period where we started to go sideways. And then suddenly, not so much.
You know, and when it goes sideways, after you lose your first trade, that's when I start to look at things a little bit outside the box, like meaning the trend lines and stuff like that. I think I notice these things as they happen, but if I end up in a losing trade, you know, particularly if I end up with two losing trades in a row, then that's the time to look at the actual... the things that are going on with the market that are, you know, the things that are changing, because the trend is likely changing at that point. And, you know, if you get involved in a trend change, which is what this looks to be right here, you know, it's in the channel, and I was saying that it's probably going to work its way up to the top of this channel when we're looking at it on the 4-tick range chart. It's almost up there to the top of the channel now. Now, if we go back to the 4-tick range chart, We'll see. There was bearish divergence right here. Okay, we had bearish divergence right there. I took the BBC off, but the BBC was 806, I think, is where I had said the point was to short. I don't know where exactly that was. I think it was over here, right here. 806. The BBC was up here, and I said that would have been the spot to short. If you did short it, the MA1 was holding it. Once it started going sideways, I said the MA1 was holding it. You know, if you had the trade on, you could have locked in a tick or two profit, or you could have moved your stop to break even, or just above this bar right here. All right, because it looked like the MA1 was holding it, and it was wanting to get up to the top of that channel, which it has now done. Now, the slingshot is in the position down here. Hang on, let me just change something on this so you can see it a little better. When I switch between time frames, it changes the line width on that for some reason. No, every tick doesn't. But anyway, when right now it's giving, it's starting to set up some bullish divergence. You see the cycle part of this, which is this line down here, is moving up to the top, and these right here are just about to cross it and head down. That will give us bullish divergence. All right, at that point, we'll be looking for a pullback to the BBC, which I'm guessing is probably right in here somewhere. Now, if I throw the BBC back on there. Yep, right here. I eyeballed that pretty good, didn't I?
You did good.
So we would look for... Yeah, that's it. So we'd look for it to come back, test the BBC, and give us an up close to trade in that direction. All right. We just got out of that channel that I had drawn, so that's pretty bullish. Hangman would have hung us. This hangman over here. Yeah, the gravestone doji right here. Yeah, if you got short right there, you would have had, you know, 5 ticks profit in the trade. I probably would have moved my stop to break even at that point anyway. It was on top of the MA1, and you had 5 ticks profit. So it was halfway to the profit target. And it gave a down close right here. So this bar closed down. You know, if I had taken the trade and managed it the way I normally manage things, as aggressive as I normally manage things,
that,
I would have
That hanging
stopped.
Man that he's talking about right to the right yep. there of where you're at.
Yeah.
Right there.
Right in here.
Nope. Well, the candle on the right. That you just had highlighted. I assume that's what you're talking about, Chris. Is that a hanging man candle? Yes. Is the context correct? Not really. okay. Yeah. I mean, it isn't. It is. That is what that's called. But it's called that when it's up at the top of the gallows. In other words, like this big climb we've just made, if we put in that same candle up there right now, up at the top, like if we went one candle higher, then you could, you know, call that a down at the bottom, you call, if it's at the bottom, after decline, you call it a hammer. And then at the top, you call it a hanging man. But right there, you know, it's, you've, just before that, you've got a couple of candles that had higher highs. So the hanging man has to be, at, to qualify, needs to be in proper context at the top. So anyway, not trying to correct you or anything, I'm just pointing it out. So
no, it's just a little education on candlesticks. Yeah. But this one here, I know you meant Gravestone Doji right there.
Yep.
That's what he meant right here.
Yep.
Yeah, and it did look good right here. I mean, if you could have gotten short right here at 806, I would have gotten a break even on that trade, or it might have slipped me a tick, and I might have gotten a minus a tick on it.
Another thing, guys, that you got to keep in mind is when you're trading in these range charts, for those of you who have spent the time, like Chris and others, to learn candlestick patterns, okay, whether you've used them on time charts or volume charts or however you've used them, tick charts, it's going to play out a little bit differently on a range chart because there just aren't that many options available. And give yourself some time to get used to looking at range charts. Can you still bring your knowledge of candlesticks into trading with range charts? You can, but it's, I don't want to say it's not going to carry the same weight. I mean, if price runs up, if you have a nice big run up in price and then you get a Gravestone Doji, that speaks volumes. It really does. And if you have a huge sell off and then you get a, the thing is you'll never get a really big Gravestone Doji on a four tick range chart. Michael, tell us, what's the biggest Gravestone Doji you can get on a four tick range chart?
That would be four ticks.
Oh my goodness. Really?
Four ticks.
See,
you
okay,
will not
guys,
have a
my,
bar
my
bigger
point,
or smaller than four
my
ticks.
Point being is that on a volume chart, you can get a huge doji. Or on a tick chart, you can get a huge doji. On a four-tick range chart, you can't get anything bigger than four ticks. You can still get the candle. You can still start to see some patterns, but you got to balance that all. And so it just takes a little time. How many miles do you travel in an hour if you're traveling at 55 miles per hour?
If I had to guess, I would say 55.
Well, I'm guessing you travel 55 miles. Apparently this is some trick question. Or you're just relating it to a range chart. I don't know. But if you got me, you got me. All right, I guess we better shove off and move on. You got anything else you need to add, want to add, should add?
Partners meeting tonight. Again, I think I already said this. If you guys are in here on the free trial and you're not a partner yet, become a partner, get into that meeting. If you are a partner, you know, the usual time tonight, 9 p.m., you should have an email, or you will be sent an email with the link sometime today, all right, prior to the meeting.
You know, many of you, you're already doing well in your trading, you're happy, you're living large wherever you are, you don't have a leak in your slab, and so you're okay. But others, your trading is, and so I'm telling you, if what you just saw, what we just walked through with these charts and with this indicator set, and the confirmation, and the ability to limit the risk. I talked about this yesterday at the end of the show, and I want to mention again real quick, and then we'll go to David. There are there are many variables in the market. When you look at a chart, there's a lot of moving parts. There's people in the pits yelling and screaming. I think they still do that. And there's some guy in Tokyo who's having a sushi roll for lunch, and he's typing on his keyboard. There's another guy in New York's got one of those old-timey keyboards. It goes click, 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 makes a lot of noise. There's a lot of stuff happening, and you don't have any control over any of it. None. You have no control over how the market's going to move, how far it's going to move, at what speed it's going to move, at what volume there's going to be. You stop fooling yourself. You have no control over it. There's only one factor. There's only one part of the equation that you have control over, and that's how much you risk on each and every trade. You totally own that thing. Put on a cape, put on some tights, because you own that, okay? You own how much risk you're going to put on each and every trade. Now, if that's the only tool, that's the only piece of equipment you can bring to the game, the only thing that you own, the only thing that you can really control, then that's the thing that you need to learn how to manage really, really well. That's what, rather than practicing, well, I think it might go 10 points. Well, it might, but you don't know that. Well, I did a fib extension and a blah and a blah blah. Okay, fine. Throw out a pitchfork, go put some arcs up there, anything you want. Okay? It's all conjecture at best. I'm going to risk 2 points on this trade, or I'm going to risk 8 ticks on this trade, or I'm going to risk 6 ticks on this trade. There's nothing nebulous about that. You are in total, absolute control of that. Okay? So play from your strength, not from wishful thinking. Don't go away. We'll be right back with Mr. David Williams from PageTrader.com.
You're listening to CFRN, a community of believers who trade for a living. To learn more about who we are, what we do, and how we do it, call toll-free 1-866-928-3310, and we'll send you out a no-obligation information kit absolutely free. 866-928-3310.
Good morning, David Williams. Welcome to this radio program.
Thank you very much. This isn't just any radio program, Dwayne.
No, my friend.
This is CFRN.
This is the voice of the E-mini futures.
That's right. Thank you for having me here today, and good morning, Michael.
Good morning, David.
Pretty day. I'll tell you something. You know, we talked about this the other day about springtime, and it's, you know, obviously it is springtime, and roses, wherever you live, I'm sure your rose bushes are starting to bloom, and, you know, it's probably time for spring cleaning, and we talked about this the other day. It's a good idea to have, like, a spring cleaning in your own life as well, and just, you know, take care of those old obligations, get things cleaned up, whatever you can do to let yourself have, the really beautiful time of year, which from spring forward into summer is really a wonderful time. Lots of nice memories to be made, and you don't want to have all these old problems hanging around you. And you don't have to be afraid of those problems. And if you are afraid of those problems, you need to just realize that that's something you can get over and you can move on. And that freedom, the freedom from your own problems, the freedom from your own web-making device, you know, web not like the World Wide Web, but the web of problems that you allow to create, the freedom from that is the only freedom you really need. When you have that freedom, you'll feel a whole different thing going on in your personal life. And until you have that freedom, you'll feel like most people feel, which is tied down and pressured and stressed out and all that from not clearing those things up. And the clearing of them up really opens up your eyes and opens up your life. You can really look at something and see it, and you're not rushed like those people. If those, for those of you who remember the great Twilight Zone series where they showed people in different, you know, stages of their lives experiencing very unusual things. Some of them were pressured businessmen, and some of them were in other strange situations. And that's the everyday man and woman, you know, unless you get free from your own web of self-created and self-perpetuated problems. And, you know, just getting past them is all by itself a miracle, but to see yourself get past them and say, hey, you know what? That I can do that again. I don't have to let this stuff build up and accumulate around me. I can actually break through that, and it really is a breakthrough. You try that. You put that together. It's not, you know, you may think that money is going to solve your problem or a new relationship or something like that. What will solve your problem is your decision to clear out and solve your problems. That's what's going to solve your problems. All the other stuff is secondary. If you're still under the dream world of thinking that some new money is going to solve your problems when you're a person who's literally manufacturing new webs to capture yourself in unfinished work, unfinished problems, and all that stuff, money just exasperates it, and we've seen it so many times with the people who win lotteries whose lives are just totally tortured by that, because now that same mechanism's at work at, you know, 10 times the scale or 1,000 times the scale as it was before. Who was it? Didn't we just have a big lottery?
And that was today's helpful hints from Heloise. Moving on now to sports.
what?
Yeah, there was a big lottery winner. Three people split it.
Okay. Well, hopefully,
there,
I wish
there were
them
three
the
winning
best.
Tickets. I think one of the tickets was owned by a group of people.
Okay.
Except the one, I think one of the people said, well, yeah, but I didn't use the pool's money to buy that ticket. I used my own money. I think that's what I read. So anyway, all you ladies in the audience, get busy with that spring cleaning. Us real men, we're going to take jackhammers to the foundation of our homes, because we just might have a leak under the slab.
That's right.
I have a leak under my slab.
Do you really, Dwayne?
I really do.
How do you know that?
Well, I had the man come with the infrared camera.
Really? And what made you think you have a leak under your home? Why would anybody wake up and say, you know, I might have a leak under my home? What makes you say?
Well, you're in a bathroom and you're going and you haven't flushed the toilet yet, but yet you hear water running in the wall.
Oh.
And you go, there must be a sink upstairs running or something. So you go all over the house and you go, there's no water.
I only have a one-story house.
That would be difficult for you. You could get hurt. Don't do that. If you live in a one-story home, don't go upstairs. And so then you go, well, okay. And then you ponder and you do a little surfing on the internet. And you go back in that bathroom again, and you put your ear to the wall, and you definitely hear water running.
That is strange.
And you go, and then you walk around, and you look to see if there's any wet spots around the exterior of your foundation, and you don't find any. Or maybe you do, but in my case, I didn't. And so then I had to call my guy, and my guy came. And here's another way that you can know, like in the bathroom where I was hearing the water behind the wall. See, what happens is the copper pipe, this is so stupid.
I'm sure it is.
They don't do this back east, but they do it here in the desert. And your house, I don't know, do you have a basement or any kind of crawl space in your house, or does it sit on a...
No, my house doesn't have a basement. The one I actually live in doesn't have a basement.
Does it just sit on a concrete slab?
Yeah, I think the whole house is just on a concrete
slab. So here's what they do. Okay, they buy this really cheap crap copper tubing from foreign countries. We won't call any names because I don't want to offend anybody.
We don't want to offend the Chinese people. Please, go ahead.
And then they lay this copper tubing, and then they seal it up in concrete, and then you buy the house. And then 7 years after the house is built, because the earth starts to settle, and some little pebble or something puts a pricks a pinhole, or just some corrosion because you have hard water, you get a little pinhole in that copper pipe that's encased in the foundation of your home. And when you, like in the bathroom, like yesterday I had the hot water heater running and I went and stood in my that bathroom and the floor was so hot, it literally burned the bottom of my feet.
Really?
Like 120 degrees.
And so in other words, you're feeling the hot water under your home through the floor.
Yep.
That is, now that is worthy of a Twilight Zone episode.
So, and here's the deal. Unlike a leaky radiator where you can go to AutoZone and buy that stuff and pour in there and it seals it up.
Yeah,
they don't have that fast fix. No, they got to come with a jackhammer. They got to tear up the foundation of your house, wherever the leak is.
From the underside or from through the house? I mean, in other words...
Okay, now rethink that question, Dave.
Well, how do they get to the foundation of your house? Do they go through...
Yeah, they tunnel under, and they come up from beneath.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it seems to me like if you tunnel through from the floor...
No, you just...
Down,
what they do is they use the infrared camera to the best of their ability, pinpoint where that pinhole is that's spraying the hot water.
I guess that's what I was thinking, though, is that if they didn't get that right, they could be drilling up your whole floor.
Well, yeah. I mean, but I mean, it's sort of, there's companies that specialize in that.
Okay,
and so before they start jackhammering your foundation, they're like 99.9% certain that's the spot. So then they jackhammer up a big enough spot that they can get down in there, that they can repair the copper pipe. Okay, then they fill it up with dirt and they pour concrete. And depending upon where your leak is, then you got to retile your kitchen or recarpet your living room. I could be blessed in the fact that my leak is right at the base of my hot water heater in the garage. Mm-hmm. I might get off easy with $1,500 $2,000 because I don't have to retile. I don't have to. All I got to do is just pour some concrete in the hole when the guy's done. And but here's the problem. Here's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
People have this done all the time, and then 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years later, it could be 2 hours later. Because now the pressure is, that line is now pressurized again, and it's cheap copper from a foreign country, and it goes, boop, somewhere else. So the more expensive fix is to, once it happens, then you go, okay, I'm going to roll the dice, fix this for a couple grand, and just pray it never happens again. Or you have them cap all of that pipe off that's running through your foundation and just repipe your whole house and run everything through the walls.
Oh.
Which is more expensive, but in the future, if you ever get a leak for some reason, you just cut out a little section of drywall, repair the pipe, and repair the drywall, and go on about your life. $100.
Yeah, and the odds of that happening, since they're probably going to use better piping, and number one and number two, it's not, possibly anyway, it's not subject to the same type of tweaking and pushing and pulling that the ground and the whole foundation of the house would be. To cause it in the first place. So,
I was so aggravated with the builder. I was on the phone with him yesterday.
Do you mind saying that obviously this was built by not an individual, but by a company. Do you know the company, or is that the case? Is it a company that we would know?
Well, it was built by Great Western Builders,
who are
conveniently no longer in business.
Mm-hmm.
But the representative at K. Hovnanian, who bought out Great Western, he goes, well, sir...
What was the name of that company, the second one that sounded like...
K. Hovnanian, H-O-V-A-N-I-A-N.
That sounds like something you have removed at a doctor's office.
No, they're really big. They're a publicly traded company.
Okay.
Anyway, he goes, well, sir, number one, before you get ahead of yourself, Because I told him, I said, number one, I said, you build a house, okay, you'll give me a 30-year mortgage on a house, but you warranty the construction for 2 years? That doesn't mm-hmm. seem right, you know? Mm-hmm. This house is only 7 years old. Mm-hmm. You know, he goes, well, you know, it's warranted. He goes, and, you know, before you get too far ahead of yourself, we didn't actually build it. Great Western bought it. I said, I know, but you bought Great Western. He goes, well, we only bought their assets. I said, no, you bought their liabilities, too. That's mm-hmm. the way that swings. And he goes, I said, you know, I'm not going to argue or yell. I'm not going to call you names. I said, but I'm sure that you guys are still in the business of selling homes, right? He said, well, yes, we are. I said, well, trust me that there won't be a man, woman, or child on planet Earth that doesn't know that if they buy one of your homes, that after 2 years, if one of the pipes leaks in their foundation, that you guys are not going to stand behind it and that they're going to be faced with the same difficulties that I am.
Mm-hmm.
Well, hang on there. I go, no. Freedom of speech, internet, blogs, TV. I said, you know what? Google me.
Mm-hmm.
And he got really quiet. I go, oh, so you did? Okay. All right, game on. Have a nice day. And then I call my insurance agent, which is the next shot, and pretty much, you know, they're not in the business of insuring leaks under your slab, so.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. I just want to, yeah, I know this is a show about.
While you're doing your spring cleaning there, make sure you get the top shelf.
Yeah. So you do not have any insurance for that. That's, you're sure of that?
Well, I have homeowner's insurance. Oh, they pay for the guy to come out with the infrared camera to find the leak.
I know this is a show about the markets, but I just want to relate my own story.
It's about leaky slabs and the bums at K. Hovnanian Homes. That's what this show's about now. I'm even going to change the name of the website, the blog, everything. I'm going to buy T-shirts. I'm going to go march with a sign in front of their new development. Oh, yeah, it's going to get ugly.
You know, if you want to, you can make it ugly. And let me tell you something. If that's done in the right spirit, in other words, you're trying to get some action out of them, I think you have something coming. I mean, the house isn't 25 years old. It's a 7-year-old home. You shouldn't have to worry about that, and there should be something.
When I march and blog, I'm going to wear my peace sign shirt. I'm going to put a little patchouli oil on. You know, it's going to be done in love.
Yeah, okay, well, that's good.
Nothing hateful.
Just want to tell you my version of that story.
All right.
My mother owned a condo here in Las Vegas, and that condo had a leak in its plumbing, and that leak sprayed water. It's a 14th floor condo, so the, you know, condo building. And so water had sprayed down, but very, very slowly, very subtle little leak that was sort of just a fine mist. But that's all it took. And over a period of time, that fine mist kept just going and going. And that little mist would float down, and it would land on the second, you know, on the ceiling of the people below us. And that fine mist kept staying there until finally, guess what? The whole ceiling collapsed. So, you know, the people in the second in the condo below her, they're just living their lives, thinking everything's just fine. And strangely enough, one day,
your mother's
that whole
bathing
ceiling,
in their kitchen.
Yeah, their ceiling collapsed. That didn't mean that my mother came through it, because there's a great gap between these two and there's other things. But the bottom line is that water finally weakened their ceiling and the ceiling collapsed.
I had that happen in one of my condos.
Did you?
Yep.
Yeah, so what happened was, and I got a lesson in this, and this is something you may want to check up. You know, you do have homeowners insurance, but there are a number of what seem to be peculiar rules about how insurance does or doesn't pay for this. Our insurance came to us and said, I thought, well, we're covered for sure, because this is something that's not something that we did. It's not something that we didn't leave our coffee pot on and, you know, it boiled over and it spilled down and it, you know, did something. This is just internal to the building itself, and it just happened. So surely we're covered, right? You'd think that, because this isn't something I did, or my mother did. So it turns out that it works the exact opposite way, that if it had been something like my mother leaving a bathtub on and the water running and that doing the damage, they would have covered it and they would have paid. But because it wasn't the case, you know, the fact is that nobody knew that this stuff was spraying. It was internal to the condo and it was piping that we couldn't know about. Then they rely on the person downstairs' insurance to cover that. And if that person's insurance wants to, they can sue our insurance company. And so, like, wow, I would have thought for sure that we would owe them on this one. That's water from our condo. But no, since we didn't do it ourselves, since it wasn't, because it doesn't cover the condo, it covers a person, or I can't remember all the details. She explained it to me. It's unusual. You have to really kind of understand what your insurance is, what you really have, because I've been in situations like this before where insurance, you know, in the end, the people downstairs, they did nothing wrong. You know, they're just sitting there enjoying their lives until their ceiling collapsed. And they ultimately, they threatened, and I went to my insurance company and said, you guys need to pay. You know, these people, you know, they've got however many thousands of dollars of damage. And they explained to me, no, they have to go to their insurance company, and their insurance company is obligated to pay. And if the insurance company wants to come after you, then we'll protect you and we'll go to court and defend it. So in the end, that's what happened. They went to their insurance company paid it, and they just let the thing go. But insurance is a very complicated matter. Like you just said, they'll cover one little tiny piece, the guy taking pictures with the camera, but they won't cover anything else. And so it's a good idea to. And it's funny, we're talking about insurance. I think we should say this. I think it goes without saying. You really should have a good long talk with your insurance agent and find out what you have. Because as an example, recently Chris Olson, the attorney that we've had on here before, noted to me, he is in my car, he was looking at my insurance policy for the car, and he said, you are completely underinsured. And I have no idea. I had like, you know, $15,000 or something. You know, $15,000 in medical stuff. You can do that in a day in an emergency clinic. And so this is something that I'm going to be doing. I'm going to be reviewing all the insurance that I have to make sure that I really understand what coverage I have and that there are no surprises and, you know, this, that, and the other thing. One other thing about healthcare. This is something that I've told people. It depends on how you think about healthcare and how much a sickness you think you're going to have. But I personally have gone with a program that the deductible is $8,000. That means that anything up to $8,000, I pay. So now it just so happens I don't really go to the doctor much. I don't remember the last time I was at the doctor. And I'm not a person who gets a yearly cold and then goes there for a flu shot and that sort of thing. So I don't have any of that, you know, out of pocket, whatever those expenses are. So none of that means anything to me. What does mean something to me is if I come up and suddenly I have a huge accident or I have some completely mind-altering disease, then I need that coverage. So I'm more than happy to pay the first $8,000. That may sound like a lot, but most of the time it's going to be very small if I go to the doctor. But I want to be covered for the catastrophic stuff. Well, that idea will reduce your monthly health care from about $400-plus a month per person down to about $135. And that's what I pay. So because I'm willing to pay that first $8,000, that's what the insurance companies don't want to get messed with. If you'll cover your own little stuff and just use it for the big catastrophic stuff, that's the stuff that could wipe out, you know, a person. And that's where you really want it. So that's just a suggestion for people who may want to consider that. Instead of paying $400 or $500 a month per person, you can reduce that substantially. And you know, unless you are a person that gets your yearly or semi-annual cold and you want to go to the doctor and all that stuff, that's just what I've been doing. But anyway, it's a good idea for you to take a look at your own insurance policies, review what you have, what coverage you have. You know, a lot of people don't think about life insurance. You know, life insurance is like an options bet in a way, because you're basically saying to the insurance company, from this time all the way up to this age, I want a policy that covers me that in case I die, you know, these people will get this money. Well, that's not a bad plan to have in effect. You might want to rethink if you don't have life insurance. You might want to think about it. I'm not saying that you absolutely need it, but you might want to think about life insurance. if something were to happen, you know, if you've got kids and things, it might be, you know, maybe you have assets and those would be transferred to them anyway, but it might not be a bad idea to have some life insurance. It doesn't have to be the classic $1 million policy or whatever. It's just something that would make sure that everyone is taken care of. That would be something for you to look at as well. Life insurance is not very important, and I don't sell life insurance, so I'm not pitching it to you that way. Give me a call, 795-6600. I don't sell life insurance, but that's something you might want to consider as well for your family's sake. And you don't hear a whole lot about life insurance, at least lately. I haven't heard about it in the last couple of years. But I don't have it right now, but I am considering getting life insurance just for the purposes of knowing that if something happens, there's that cushion that's there in case anything else that I have is tied up in some kind of probate or whatever, you know. And a living trust is another great thing to have. That means that when you, in an accident or an illness, die, that your assets don't go into what's called probate, and they go directly to your heirs or to your wife or to whoever you want it to go to. And that makes it immediate. It goes in. There's no court. There's no government intervention and all that stuff. And that would be a real worthwhile thing to have as well, is a living trust with your wishes in it, both medical and assets and that sort of thing. So those are things you might not have thought about it for a while, but these are some of the areas we're talking about in cleaning up your life. To go out, take the time and trouble to get that done, make the appointment, go through with it, and get it done. Once you get it done, you'll feel much, much better about it. There's no drug possible. There is no drug that can make you feel as good as being a self-responsible human being. There just isn't. Because it may not look that good from the outside to see somebody else being responsible, but I'll tell you, there's no drug like it that'll feel as good as being your own person, taking care of your business, brightening the corner where you are. There's a drug for you, the drugless drug, that will make you feel better than any drug could ever make you feel. And then you can just laugh at people who take drugs to feel good because they don't know what the real one is, which is to be self-responsible, to take care of the business, and you'll enjoy your life, your free time, much, much more because you won't have all those things hanging out there waiting for you when you know the party's over that you got to go, you know, suffer with. I'm telling you, it's that good. So anyway, well, I'm sorry to hear about that, Dwayne. Hopefully you'll get out of that fast and easy with your water heater, you know, the area near your water heater, and you won't have to worry too much about it. And, you know, those things happen, you know. I was worried about the one with my mother's condo because the damage that was done downstairs was approaching $30,000. And, you know, if we had to, you know, if we didn't have insurance, that would be one thing. But it turns out that their insurance covers that. And so that's one of those things where, again, it's a good idea to have an insurance agent and to know what it is you've got and where you're covered and all that stuff. So that's my little bit on that. And owning property, you know, owning homes, owning what condos, whatever, that stuff can get complicated. You know, that's why you want to have that stuff in place. I know you're insured, Dwayne. I know you've got all that stuff together. But, you know, this stuff happens. A fellow that works with me, Johnny, has in his neighborhood, there's some of the homes there that were built incorrectly. And there's some kind of cracking or something going on. And, you know, that stuff happens. And, you know, then you got to go through all the stuff. It's a good idea if you have insurance for that because nobody really wants to pay. It's like the World Trade Center. You know, one of my big arguments for the World Trade Center thing was that, you know, insurance paid. Insurance came along, and they did pay. That's how that new center is being built, you know, the new Twin Towers or whatever they've got there. Somebody had to come along and say, yeah, this is covered. And the insurance company is in the business of being able to come to you and say, I'm sorry, this isn't covered. That's the actual business they're in. They're in the business of collecting as much premium as they can and being able to turn to you and say, I'm sorry, that's not covered, or paying out as little as they possibly can. So when that happened, when 9/11 happened, you can bet your bottom dollar that of all the people that supposedly weren't allowed in to check out what really happened, I'll absolutely guarantee you that that insurance company, or those three insurance companies, they were allowed in to check out what happened. And they were there for one purpose, to be able to deny the claim, because it was about $8 billion. And they didn't want to have to pay that out. Just like when your car gets in an accident and the guy comes out and he looks at it and he says, well, yeah, I see your bumper's damaged here. We're going to do that. But this side here, that's not, we don't cover that. This little dent over here, that had to be there before, because they're trained to do that. So they're trying to get away from paying anything that's not theirs. And in some cases, they won't pay at all if, you know, for whatever the reasons. They're looking to minimize what they pay. Well, this, you know, the insurance company's paid in full. And they did, better believe it, they did a $7 billion or $8 billion investigation, right? Because they needed to pay. They wanted to get out of paying, but they couldn't. And they knew all the stories. They knew all, because all that stuff would have made it not covered, you know. But in the end, you know, had it been something where it was done surreptitiously by our government, or if it had been done this way or that way, they would have gotten out of paying $8 billion, and they would love to do that. After their investigation, they couldn't find any of that stuff that you and I and everybody else sees all over the Internet, and they were forced to pay, and so they did. And that's what's financing the building of the new towers that you see right there. That isn't private money. That's insurance money that's paying for that. And they paid because they couldn't figure out a way to get out of it. No matter how many things that were swirling around, how many rumors there were, how much stuff that this was, you know, George Bush put bombs in the building or whatever your thing was, and whatever you think about it. And maybe something very surreptitious did happen. I'm not completely discounting it.
It was the cheap copper pipes from a foreign country.
What's that?
It was the cheap copper pipes from a foreign country.
Yeah, the cheap copper pipes finally burst. I mean, that's the thing. You get your pipes piping from China, and you're going to have that problem. Look what it did to the Twin Towers. You know, all that really was a simple water leak, a bad pipe, and the things just came down. You know, so no. Anyway, yeah, Dwayne. My suggestion to you is, I like the idea of you putting some pressure on that company to stand behind their product, because that literally could make, in the end, if it really wanted to, if that problem popped up here and there again, like you said, it could make your life a living hell. And somebody needs to back that.
I can go hire me some undocumented workers to do the actual protest for me.
Yeah. Give them some good signs.
Yep.
If you make the signs, make them really, really big.
Oh, I want to make them bilingual.
Bilingual signs. There you go. Paint it on both sides. Anyway, well, and then I got one last little story. I'm sorry, but you got me going. Many years ago, a girl that worked for me had her car at Fletcher Jones Mercedes, or Fletcher Jones Chevy out here. This is in the 1980s. And she had to keep taking the bus to work. And finally, one day I said to her, how come you keep taking the bus to work? What's that all about? And she says, well, my car has been over at Fletcher Jones for, you know, the last, you know, 2.5 months, and they say it's called the mystery knock or something. I said, what? And so I called over there, and I talked to them, and they said, yeah, it's a mystery knock, and it just sounded like a bunch of nonsense to me. So I went down there and spoke to the manager, and I said, listen, nobody has their car in service for 2.5 months. This is a girl that's taken a bus to work. Return her car to her in, as it is, or, you know, fix it, one or the other. And I don't remember all the details, but in one way or the other, they said, no way, we're not going to do that. And, you know, and so that got my ire up, kind of like your ire up is up today. And I took about 30 of the people that were working for me, and we made signs, and we stood out on the corner. They stood out on the corner, just like you said, really big signs. And the sign said, Fletcher wins, I lose. And a lot of people would drive by honking, and a lot of people. And finally, the news came out there, an actual news station, and they did a little story on their section called "Taking It to the Streets," and they were there. And so finally, the son of Fletcher Jones Jr. These guys are still in town. The father was a crook. I mean, I'm just going to tell you straight up. Fletcher Jones Jr. is a straight shooter, but his dad was just, you know, he was just a guy that, you know, saw people coming. And so Fletcher called, he talked to me, and he said, well, why didn't you come to me at first? You know, because we had all these picketers out there, and apparently they weren't selling any cars. And it only took 3 days. We had 3 days that we were picketing out there, and they bought her a new car.
Wow.
So here's the irony now. Let me finish the story for you. The irony is she went right out and got into an accident in that new car.
Oh.
Once again, now she had her new car in the shop. Guess where? At Fletcher Jones Chevy. So, you know, you better be careful what you wish for. In the end, that car was fixed and they did it. But he did the right thing. He stepped up and said, and the right thing was, we messed up. We've had your girl's car for 2.5 months, you know. This isn't correct. We shouldn't have done that. I don't remember all the details, but in the end, they didn't want to have picketers picketing. And I hate to be the person to do that. I was much more aggressive back then than I am now. But, you know, it was just wrong. This girl was out. She didn't know what to do about it. And it did end up getting her, a resolution. She didn't even need a new car. She just wanted her car back. So, in a way, you're in that same kind of situation, and somewhat the same, because houses are big investments for people. It's in most people's cases, it's the biggest investment you're going to make. So, you know, it would probably be worth putting some pressure on them. That would be my suggestion, for a little bit anyway. Am I going to see you in the news, Dwayne? Is
Maybe.
That the kind of pressure I'm going to be seeing?
Maybe.
Am I going to be seeing, you know, popular talk show host jailed for, you know, BB gun assault at home builder, something like that?
This will be a total Gandhi nonviolent kind of a protest.
Okay. All right. Well, I'd be curious to see how that works. I think that will make some. I think you'll get something out of that. I think you got something coming.
Yeah. I think
so.
Mostly, I just want to fix so I can, you know, so I can have a little peace of mind.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, you want to get onto the markets? People have been just tolerating both of us all morning here.
Yeah, they're pretty ticked off.
I know. All right. Let me apologize in advance. Here we go.
Let me scroll down and see how ticked off they are.
Let's go right to the S&P. We'll get right to it. Let's go back a little bit here. Recently, this decline that we're underway right now was forecast to occur off of the March forecast monthly top. Reflected wave, our turning point methodology, had called for March of this year to be a top, and then we would expect normally a multi-month decline. Now, the market has declined, and we're in April now. We've had a pretty decent decline, nothing huge, but a decent beginning of a decline, and that set up on the weekly cycle that indicates the week of April 16th, which is next week, plus or minus 1 week. And as we've talked about, it normally will occur in the on-time week or 1 unit early. So it appears that that bottom has come in 1 week early. Next week is the on-time week. That is a good indication that the market is still in a good uptrend, because the market will tend to put in these bottoms 1 unit early or on time. So it cuts it down by 33%, the time frame that you would be looking for that bottom to be in. Normally it's plus or minus 1 unit of time. So this is very important what has happened today, because this morning when the market opened up, by opening today above a certain level, it indicated, and we forecast early this morning, that the market would advance up to 1380/81. That would be the first target on the upside. So any support and resistance levels between this morning's open, which is 1366 and, you know, 1381, would be pretty insignificant because of the need for the market to get up to 80 or 81. Now, 80 and 81 are natural levels for this time period, and so that's the reason, that's the technique that we utilize to know or have a high certainty that they would get to the 80-81 level. Now, as it sits, we're sitting at 81 right now. We've made a swing high today of 83. Our highest level in our support and resistance panel is 83/84 for today. Let me just double-check that. And
That's the target we had at the open this morning, 80-81.
Okay. 83-84 is the highest.
Actually, this is the target we put it on the blog last night. That was what we were looking for on the upside today.
Okay. They've obviously achieved that. They rallied up today. And this is a...
it was the high back on Tuesday, and it was a high back on Monday. So it's a weekly trading zone for us. Yeah, Monday.
Oh, 83 was the high back on Tuesday, right.
Well, but this zone, there was no hourly close above the zone at 81. This is an hourly chart up right here.
Yes.
So it spiked it, but then it closed back inside of the zone. And then Tuesday, on the London Open, it got up to the zone, but never closed above it. And then today, Wednesday, we chopped around the 67, 68 level. And then last night on the blog, we said tomorrow, if the market, you know, attempts to move higher, just don't fight it. Just let it go. And then watch this area for, you know, potentially a place to get short the market. Because on the daily chart, this is the first sell signal that we've had since December on daily chart.
Yeah, on the daily chart.
Right there.
Yeah, well, we'll see. Let's let them put it in here a little bit. We've got a little bit of time, you know, left in the session today for them to go up. This happens to coincide. You've got your weekly trading zone. This happens to coincide with a natural number that would be due today. But I like to see a little confirmation. And this morning when we opened higher, that was pretty much enough for us to think, well, you know what, we're probably going to be going to do that right now. So in today's session. It was due today, not on a specific hour, but in today's session of the date of April 12th. So they're up there, and we're in a trend day up right now. This has just been a straight line move up. This is the earliest confirmation that the weekly bottom is in, and we'll update this as we get further along especially into next week, because that's really going to be the more important time frame. That'll be the on-time week. And like I said, we're looking for the bottom to be on the on-time week or one unit early. This is the earliest confirmation that it is the one unit early weekly bottom. So this is good stuff, and we'll let the market test this level a little bit more, and we'll take some action on it. So I think other than that, Duane, I think that's everything we have for the S&P just right now. Do you have anything else you want to add to that, or...
Nope.
Want to talk about your pipes bursting a little more? Or
No, I got it out of my system. I'm good.
All right. Okay, that's good. You can call me about it. We can grind on it together. Just those guys building those homes with the pipes that burst. Let's see. Also,
I was
going to
talk about Instagram, but we took up all the time on pipes, so we'll talk about Instagram tomorrow.
Okay. I mentioned yesterday that we're coming into next week. Tuesday is going to be very important, so keep that in mind, because we're going to have a roadmap based on that. You can get the roadmaps by being online with us on Messenger Pro by going to PageTrader and either signing up for Messenger Pro or taking a free trial of it, and you can take advantage of the setup that's going to take place early next week. This is for the S&P we're talking right now.
Okay.
So keep that in mind. Okay, so let's move over to gold for today. We'll just run through the markets here real quick. Give me just a moment to get over there. Okay, yesterday, a while back, you know, back on the last reflected wave bottom was forecast for April 5th in June gold. And the bottom actually came in one unit early on April 4th. And the market was advancing. And yesterday we suggested that the advance was going to continue. There's two levels. One of them is 1671.72. They completed that today. And then the other level was 1682, and today's high was 1681 and change. So they've completed both of the natural targets on the upside for gold. And this also further... sets up an even further advance potential for gold here. I'm glad to see this because we have our longer-term position in gold, but over the larger picture on the weekly charts, there's a possibility of even a larger advance here. So first things first, though, is I want to see how they handle the 82 level, the final issue up here that we were talking about. Daily close today above... Let me change this, my mistake. I was still giving you April stuff. Just a moment here.
So what month do we want to be in on gold?
Oh, it still is 82. It's June from what Bert told me. It was June. So yeah, 82 is the number. And today's high in June is actually 81.3. So how they handle that is important. A daily close above 82 will be the stronger position. Below 82, the weaker, at least short term, for the gold market. And I think this is just from yesterday to today, just telling people to buy pullbacks on the way up to higher prices. And they've completed both of them now. So over the last 2 days, whatever we've been talking about, this with gold. Let me think if there's anything else on this setup for gold. No, that's about it for now with regard to that setup in gold. We had the U.S. Treasury bond market. We've talked about this a number of times, putting in the March 19th forecast weekly bottom. We've had a multi-week advance off that. We've suggested and continue to suggest selling call premium. These are options for December expiration. Go all the way out to December. Call Bert Schlichter from Daniels Trading and say these words. Bert, I want to sell call premium with December expiration in the U.S. 30-year Treasury bond. And then Bert's going to say, what strike price? And then you're going to say, that's why I'm calling you. I want to know where I should sell. And then Bert will go get you the strike price, and if you open an account with him, he'll put the trade on for you and manage the trade. He's licensed to do that. I'm not. Dwayne's not, but he is. So give him a call. Do you want to give out his number?
Why not?
Yeah.
866-928-3310.
There you go.
And I just put it in everybody's chat box.
Thank you.
And don't call around lunchtime because he gets a little grumpy and he might strike you. So, you know, wait till he comes back from lunch or catch him early in the morning right after breakfast.
Okay. I didn't know that he might strike somebody. That's news to me.
Just
but that's
typed in. No, I'm just kidding.
I know.
Bert will say, December bond options are not trading.
That's funny. Somebody said Bert will say. That's good.
No, that's what Bert said. But okay. Bert would say September options are trading.
Okay, well, go out as far as you can. That's my point. And there you go.
That's better.
There you go. So that's a nice easy trade. That can be sitting in the background while you're doing other trades. You don't have to watch it tick for tick. You can check that day by day or even week by week, believe it or not. So let's move over to the euro contract. The euro, very much like gold, Reflected Wave had forecast a bottom in the euro on the daily chart for April 6th. The bottom came at a few ticks below on April 9th, which is one trading day later. That was a Friday-Monday combination, so April 6th was Friday, April 9th was Monday, and that would normally produce a multi-day advance. Yesterday we were talking that if the market could stay below, however you want to think about it, as long as the market stayed below 131.50 to 131.55, it was a continued short sale, but as soon as they close above that level, it would be a long position. We talked about that yesterday. And the market was able to get and close on the hourly chart above the 131.55 level, and that meant go long. And if anybody followed that, even on the hour itself it closed, that was at 131.70. That's the price. The market has continued higher with its normal pullbacks, and it made so far a swing high of 132.18. We're trading currently at 132.05. So a little bit of a nice trade in there for somebody who wanted to take what we talked about yesterday and put it to use. It did require an overnight position, or maybe it did because it happened on the Globex. But that now tends to indicate a more important bottom. It's not total confirmation, but I'm pretty much believing now that we are not going to see a whole lot more decline off of the forecast originally for the weekly top of March 26. You may recall that we said there was a big volatility cycle coming on the week of March 26 for the euro. If you take a look, the week of March 26 made a top, and we had about a 350 pip sharp one-week decline off of that. That's the beauty of the volatility cycle. And there'll be many, many more volatility cycles coming up in the euro. This is a really good market, and it does replay its own volatility cycles very well. Everything about markets is cyclical. All of the expressions of the market are cyclical, very much in the same way that you can recognize a person by their traits, because people tend to repeat their built-in traits, the way they blink, the way they talk, the way they turn their head, the way they tilt their head, the way they walk, the sound of their voice, the way they laugh. You know, all these different things are sort of the same as the market. They're cyclical by nature. They express themselves. You can recognize people that way. The market does the same thing. It has these things. It is not random. And I can't wait to inform the writer of the book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street, which he's been informed before, but he's still under the grotesque illusion of thinking that the markets are completely, absolutely random by nature. And I'm here to tell you that he's wrong. And over time, he will be proven wrong by science. Because even though technical analysis is not strictly a science, over time it's going to continue to advance, and he's going to slowly have to recede from that position. Of course, he'll be dead by the time all of that comes out. Maybe many of us will as well. But over time, he will, if he could continue to live, I'm not wishing him to die soon, but I'm saying that if he could live a long time, he would see that technical analysis will continue to advance and prove, I believe I can prove it now, but I won't be able to prove it to him in one or two sittings, because the world of statistics allows for all kinds of anomalies that themselves, and rightfully so, wouldn't prove a case, wouldn't prove a thesis. So anything we show him is going to be interesting, but nowhere near a proof. I'm not sure what would be a proof to a person that believes that way. But either way, everything is cyclical in the market. It repeats. Volatility is just one of those things that does repeat over time. And one of the great trade setups is to have a volatility cycle and to be get in on it. You don't have to get in at the edges. You just have to wait for the market to start to move in one direction and get along with it. Find, you know, you can use reflected wave to buy a pullback. You can use Dwayne's and Michael's material to get in at those appropriate levels. And whatever it is, you can take advantage of these volatility swings, just like what we just saw, the 350, 400 pip move in the euro here. So that was a good example of one. I happen to know some people, and I think Dwayne does too, I won't mention any names, that were short for this, and they had a nice move down. I hope they took advantage of getting out of any remainder of that position upon the break of those levels that we talked about yesterday. Perhaps some of them even may have taken a long position from that as well, from the breakout of those levels. Okay, so let's move on over to the crude oil market. Nothing new to add to this. The crude oil market is essentially bouncing off of the attempt at the $99.70 level. I've talked about this a number of times recently. Crude oil was running on the same cycle as the S&P. These markets that often have no real connection to each other fundamentally will run on the same cycles, and that will last for a period of time, and then the market will switch, and other cycles will be running with a number of different markets. And in many, many cases, those are not connected, correlated markets. It's just the way that that rulership occurs. If whatever you want to call it, I call it a rulership. The market gets under a cycle. There's a group of markets that will all operate under the same terms for some period of time. It can be very helpful if you're doing the homework to catch that and let that work together with your trade setups. So March was a top, the actual top for it was March for crude that we'd forecast. We're having that decline now. We have a roadmap out on this, and I'm going to later reveal a little bit more about that as we get closer to the end of the month of March, if they do or don't break the critical level. So we'll go further into that. If you want to see it, though, you can get into PageTrader and go to Messenger Pro and take a look at that yourself. And then finally, we have soybeans, which continues to be strong here. And I've mentioned before that soybeans is running on the same cycle, but it runs out on April. April is the month for a top in the soybean market. So we do want to be cognizant of the important price levels that they're testing right now. And we may issue a short sale or a roadmap on soybeans coming up here for those of you who will trade it. And, you know, the S&P isn't always the best trade. Sometimes there's other markets that have really nice trading setups. So I think that, Duane, I think for right now that's everything. We're back to the very quiet behavior here, you know, after the advance today. There's probably going to be a trade a little bit later this morning, but that basically is our overview on the market. One
Ed,
last thing I do
Ed
want
to... has a question for you. Is David looking for any further downside from the March monthly top?
When under normal conditions, yes. I would be
out,
looking.
And how confident is David that the monthly top is actually in?
I am confident that the monthly top is in. They've done nothing to break the larger trend. And it's possible, as I've mentioned before, longer term, we're still looking for the market to get to 1433 and then 1465. I don't have the numbers directly in front of me, but that higher prices are going to come, but there should be an important reaction along the way. And I am confident right now that in spite of the weekly bottom, and we will advance. So you know, I want to point this out. One of the things that we want to be careful with when utilizing reflected wave, we have a monthly top. The market has declined down to a weekly bottom. That weekly bottom is going to advance. It is. So it's not a good idea to short the market in the face of a one-unit early or on-time weekly bottom. It's a better idea to go long, take advantage of that move up, and then if the market continues to confirm on the monthly, which it normally would, then you can short from there. I think it would be a mistake to add to a short position in the face of a weekly bottom. So I hope that makes sense to the questioner because sometimes people will ask a question like that, and we've been doing this for a long time, and say, well, you're very confident that the top is in. And I say yes. And then they go out and they'll sell something. Well, but you're selling in the face of a weekly bottom, which is going to advance for several weeks. As I mentioned earlier, take a look at the U.S. Treasury bond market. Use that as your model for what the S&P is going to do. Go look at the 30-year Treasury bond. I'm ordering you to. I'm telling you to. Go look at a weekly chart. That's what the S&P wants to do. So with that in mind, you wouldn't want to be shorting it right now because the bottom is either already in or is being formed into next week. And so it would be better to take advantage of that multi-week advance and then short the market than it would be to just go short now because I say, yes, I'm confident the top is in. I would rather see you do that. So I'm not actually saying that the S&P is going to do exactly what the bonds have done, but I mean, use that as sort of a general idea for what's going to happen. You know, we're going to have a multi-week advance off of that, off of the lows that we're making right now. Ain't no two gosh darn ways about it. So I don't want you to short the market in the face of that, in spite of the fact that I'm confident that the monthly top is in. Take advantage of that statement after the rally. Okay, so I hope that makes that clear. Yesterday we talked, one other thing I was going to mention, yesterday we talked about Tesla, the stock that we've been following. For those of you that do have reflected wave, you can see the beautiful daily turning points on this. We had forecast that recently that the market would put in a top on March 27th. You might recall that date runs out on the euro and on many other markets, and then it would also make a bottom. We talked about yesterday that April 10th and 11th would mark a bottom for this stock. And today the market has bounced off there and will continue. This will be a likely a multi-day sideways to up affair off of that bottom. And then we have not done anything with the stock yet. We really like the company, as we've talked about. We like what they're doing. I think they're going to be widely accepted. They have nearly 9,000 orders for a car that costs at least $60,000 up to 100,000. They've got 9,000 orders for that car. And I think it's going to be fair to say that when that car does come out, which it's going to come out in June or July of this year to its first owners, that the car magazines are going to rave about this car, and it's going to be beautiful. You can see it on their site. And they have an SUV in the works. But, I mean, this is really a strange thing. This is a car company in Silicon Valley. Silicon Valley is manufacturing cars, not Detroit, Silicon Valley. So, you know, Detroit's normally where you'd picture cars being built, but in reality, now we have a car manufacturing company in Silicon Valley, California, and they're going to be there to stay. So that's a new world order that has just occurred. Additionally, the only car company since 1965 to have a public offering, a successful public offering, is Tesla. That's a long time ago, 1965. So they pulled off a number of things already. Their business model was to come out with a very small, high-end, expensive sports car to get everyone's attention, which they did, and they continue to sell that car. They don't sell it in America anymore, but they do sell it in several other countries. That's their Tesla Roadster, 0 to 60 in 3.7 seconds, pure battery, all electric, 240-mile range, really brilliantly engineered little car, very tiny little car. Many of you would not probably enjoy that car. I'm not sure I would either because it's so small. And then with those funds, they're able to go out and now design and take orders for their next car, which is the Model S, which is a four-door car. Many ways it's similar to and as big and wide as an S-Class Mercedes, but it also looks sort of Jag and Aston Martin-ish. And that car is coming out in June. That'll be delivered. They're actually manufacturing them there. The car has a 17-inch touchscreen in the center of the dash. It's not a little thing like a 6-inch, 7-inch screen. It's huge. It completely takes over the dash. All the controls are on that screen. It's a Silicon Valley car. It's a tech car, and it runs completely on electricity. The high-end model will have a 300-mile-per-day range. So I hope you can get all your business done in 300 miles. Otherwise, you'll have to pull over and use one of their many charging stations they're putting up all over the state of California on the open highway. That's the same company, Tesla. They're not saying, well, we'll have to wait for charging stations to be put up, and what are we going to do about that? Because if people could run out or whatever, they're putting them up. They have agreements to put up charging stations every 25 miles on, you know, Highway 1 and all these other highways to do it themselves. I mean, this is really brilliant, wide-open thinking to just go get all this stuff done yourself, to create the infrastructure themselves. Amazing. And then they're coming out after that, after this Model S, with their SUV. And their SUV will be a high-performance SUV. Again, this is a higher-end thing, but it'll probably start in the $50,000 range. You know, a lot of people, there's a lot of Dodge and Chevy trucks that will run up to $50,000 or more. So that will sell. And then finally, they will come out with all this high-end stuff will finance the ability for them to come out with a normal consumer, ordinary, everyday consumer like you and I that can go out and buy one of their electric cars, like a Chevy Volt type of car that's pure electric, drives around and, you know, lets people get onto that whole program. It's been delightful. I've talked about mine for several months here ad nauseum on the program, and it really has been a delight. I'm very used to driving electric now, and as you know, I put my other car up for sale a while back, and I mentioned it on the program, and someone did purchase my piston car, you know, to call it that, and so I hope that person's going to be very, very happy with it. I purchased them new floor mats for it, even though it doesn't need it, and two new keys for it. These are the touchless entry type of keys for this car. I did everything I could to make sure they'd be very happy with it, and hopefully the car will have a nice new home for somebody to frighten themselves with. The person who purchased it, none of you know him, and I didn't know him either, but one of the people, one of your listeners, Dwayne, did express interest in purchasing the car, but had not made arrangements yet to do so. And then it did get sold to a 68-year-old fellow on the East Coast who really just wants to drive a nice car. And if he pulls up at the light to somebody in a Camaro or a Mustang, he can just, you know, tootle on by and leave them in his dust. Because as you get older, you feel like, you know, I need to prove to these kids that I'm worth something.
Get a skateboard.
I need to be able to scoot away from a light pretty quick. Or on the freeway, 50, 60 miles an hour, and you just, you know, pull away nice and stoutly. Well, this will give him that opportunity to do that. So anyway, so that's done, and I'm glad that that finally took place, and I wish the car the best and the person who got it. So keep an eye on Tesla. This is a stock that I think is going to go later. There's millions of stocks, millions of different opinions about stocks, but hopefully this stock will give us another pure technical signal, and subtracting everything I just said about the fundamentals of the company and the owner of the company, if the technicals line up, we're going to buy. And I'm not talking about daily tops and bottoms, but if we get something really sizable, we'll get in it. And Duane, I'll tell you when we do that on the program.
Okay.
So we can follow that along. So really right now, I think that's all the news I have for today, Duane. If I had the time, Duane, I'd come out with you and I'd pick it right in front of that place and we could just be really mad together and like throw water balloons at the executives and all that stuff.
Now, I'm going to leave you in the garage with the jackhammer. I'll take care of the picketing.
All right. What do I do with the jackhammer?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
You squeeze something and you go, brr, I don't know.
Yeah, just make the big noises in the garage.
Yeah.
But no, I wish you the best with that. And if you have any questions, you know, you can always call Chris Olson and ask if there's any other things you can do about that that you may not have considered.
I'm not familiar with his work.
Oh, you're just Mr. Sarcasm today.
Yeah.
You're pretty good. This is Duane Reeves in kind of a little, you know, a little testy today.
All right, here's the deal.
All right, here's the deal.
Now, we'll save it for tomorrow. Sometime. We'll talk about, because in the meantime, you might actually figure out what it is, and then we can have a better discussion. Got a pen and paper?
Yes.
Instagram.
Okay.
And then underneath that, write three guys, $1 billion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I think I've heard about this. This is, they sold it to, I can't remember who they sold it to, but they sold it to Facebook or something like that. Is that right?
They sold it to that crazy Zuckerberg kid.
They did. Okay.
Yeah. No, but there's some. We all remember the .com era when it was a new economy and the world was changing and people were throwing money at companies, even though nobody really knew how they were ever going to make any money. But this new economy thing has matured. And many of the companies that I'm not going to go into the Instagram story today. There's some very poignant facts to this that's really going to make people step back and think, wait a minute, that's not even possible, but it is. But I'll talk about that tomorrow. But what is one of the most popular things in the world today? People go, oh, I don't know, gosh, the iPhone, the iPad, or the iTunes. Okay, you're really close, but there's one thing that connects all of those things together. It's something that didn't exist 15 years ago. It was some very elegant code, and today we refer to it as the MP3. Okay.
So this is a new advanced use of the MP3?
Well, no. A guy wrote a little bit of code that enabled people to encode sound, be it music, spoken word, whatever, into a very small, compact file with no detectable loss of quality. And in creating the MP3... the recording industry, the music industry, the selling of records and cassette tapes and compact discs, just you brought this up the other day, I think, about that's a dead horse now.
Yeah, the CD is over. No, no more CDs.
It's the MP3. It's the file, okay? So, was there a young visionary back in 1999 that recognized what a powerful medium that this MP3 could become? Because back then there was no iPod. There was certainly no iPhone or iPad. It was hard to find a device other than your computer where you could play an MP3. There were a few, but they were kind of cheesy and cheap, and they didn't work so well. Steve Jobs is the first. He brought the first decent MP3 player to market. Yeah, I mean, really decent, away from your desktop or laptop computer. But there was a young man, a young visionary, who recognized the potential for this MP3 in 1999, and he bought stock in a company called, guess what? Guess what the name of the company was?
I'll tell you. MP3?
Oh, I don't have my applause screen up. I would give you some nice applause for that.
Thank you.
Because, I mean, there was a lot of choices. You could have said Apple, or I don't know, or... All right, guys, here we go. Delayed applause. Okay. So, this guy's not messing around. He's not waiting on anybody. No Apples, no Sony Ericsson, none of this stuff. No. Straight to the scam artist. yeah, there was a company, mp3.com, went public, had all the trappings of the new economy, the internet startup. I mean, boy, it was all that and a couple of con artists. Okay? So see, here's the thing. I mean, did they actually have MP3s? Yes. Could you actually download them from their site? Yes, you could. There can be a great concept, there can be a great idea, but you can still get it wrong. I only bought a very small amount of stock in that company. It wasn't like some huge loss or anything. It was just, you know, it was a play. And it wasn't it wasn't expensive at all. It was, I don't know, it was a dollar a share or something, you know. So it wasn't a big play or a big loss. But I said, wow, this is the cutting edge. This is going to be the big thing. So I better get some of this. Well, I was right in that it was going to be the big thing. I mean, let's face it. No more albums, no more cassette tapes, no more CDs. All MP3. But the company MP3.com, they went belly up. I think the guys ran off with the money. I'm sure that there's got to be a site out there now called mp3.com. There is, but it's not the original company. I mean, this company, I mean, they had a plan. It was like, oh man, blah blah, you know. But somebody just bought the domain name now and they're using it for whatever they're using it for. But this mp3.com is not the publicly traded company. I mean, this is a WordPress site. Instagram, billion-dollar baby, hipstamatic, identical product, not so much. So, anyway, we'll talk about Instagram tomorrow because there's something. The fact that it sold for $1 billion, that's old news. But I'm gonna shed another light on it that some people may not have thought about, and you're gonna go, wow, that's crazy, and it is. And we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Well, I can't wait to be here.
All right, buddy. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you guys for the questions. I'll see you all tomorrow. Have a great evening.
All right, guys, that's going to do it for me. Time to get up. Get on up and get out of here with my leaky slab. here's the 10,000 contract chart. The bounce, another bounce, bounce right into this zone. Okay, now here's where it gets interesting. Okay, read the blog from last night. Okay, this was not a sell the silly thing kind of a deal. This was an area where the potential for something larger to be set in motion. Will it? I don't know. I'm going to wait and see if it sets up. These are not from this week. These are from last week. Get those out of there. Okay. Now, what would it look like? Okay, let's go to the hourly. Here's the hourly. Now, for those that were in the live trading room this morning, you remember that when we were down here, we said, looks like the market wants to go to here. Okay, it got to here, and for we're in the third hour of treading water. We've got another 26 minutes left. The first indication would be some close below this 1380 level, an hourly close. But here's what's going to happen. Price coming down is going to hit a rising MA1. And wherever that happens, whether it's there or up here, see, if this continues to go sideways, this will continue to rise. So remember yesterday we talked about the point of contact? See, there'll be a point at some point, this MA1 and price, they're going to meet up. If price comes down to find the MA1, look for a potential bounce. If price goes sideways and the MA1 rises to meet price, then look for something potentially a little more like this. Okay? Because if this just keeps going sideways and this continues to rise, then price could just come like this. At which point, that MA1 is going to turn. It's going to get red. And then there's a good chance that price will come back up to test that as it begins its path down. See, my point is that this is a big picture setup. And so there's no... You don't need to be in any kind of a hurry. Patience. Could you just take the trade now and set a reasonable stop for a big picture trade? Well, yeah, you could. In fact, you could call Bert and talk to him about that. He could help you frame this trade up. That's what he does. That's what he does very well. He and Leslie both. You can reach them toll free, 866-928-3310. And you may be thinking, well, yeah, but I'm not a client. They're not going to talk to me. Well, you're wrong. I know that doesn't happen often, but you're wrong. You tell them, hey, I'm a listener of CFRN. And they said if I called, you'd talk to me. And they will. They'll be more than happy to talk to you. Would they like to have you as a client? You bet. Will they work hard to earn your trust and your business? Yes. Once you become a client, will they work extra hard to keep you happy? They will. Will they deal with you straight off the top of the deck? Always be honest. Always watch your back. Yes, yes, and yes. They will. That's who they are. It's how they roll. It's how they came to be a part of the CFRN team. Okay? Integrity is really big around here. So give them a call. If you like what you've seen today as far as this big picture setup, there's no guarantee the market's going to sell off. All I'm telling you is that the ingredients are on the table. Could happen. Call Bert and Leslie. Talk to them. 866-928-3310. They could help you. Even though you're not a client yet, they'll talk to you. They're licensed brokers. They'll share some information with you about how you might be able to participate in this trade to the downside if it comes together. And maybe you make a few bucks. And maybe you go, hey, I made a few bucks. My own broker never even did that for me. But yet, the broker from CFRN, Daniel's Trading, he did it for me, and I wasn't even a client. So if he'll do that for you and you're not even a client yet, imagine what they might do for you once you become a client. You follow my reasoning here? All right. It's the best advice I can give you. Call them today, 866-928-3310. Partners, I'll see you in the partners meeting tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern. If you've been on a free trial, you're ready to become a partner, you want to put that slingshot to work, you want to learn all the stuff that we talk about every day when we do the recap, if you're ready, send an email to support@cfrn.net. There's still enough time left in the day. We can get your paperwork over to you. We can get you signed up. We can get you into that partners meeting tonight. support@cfrn.net. Thanks so much for tuning in. Whoever you are, wherever you are, may God continue to richly bless you with His mercy and with His grace. And I'll see you at the bell.
Remember this. There is no greater return on investment than to see a human life changed and given hope. As always, pray hard and trade safe. Any financial information discussed on this show is simply the opinion of our host, Dwayne Reeves, his co-hosts, and guests. To learn more about trading e-mini futures or to take a one-week free trial in our live trading room, call 1-866-928-3310. 866-928-3310. Information discussed on this radio program should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Always do your own due diligence and consult with a licensed securities broker or financial planner before making any investment decision.